Welcome to Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 9-7. I am your host, Sean Nola Kirkland. With me, as always, is Robert Desert Eagle Allen.
I've been dethroned.
And you were host last week. With us, as sometimes, Samurage Sage Morris Green.
I'm mostly always here.
And back from the dead is Aaron Blue Swimovitz.
I swear, nobody will ever get my name right. Oh, also, the bitch is back.
Did you see how I wrote it on the outline?
It was like Erinick or something to that effect.
Erink.
Erink. Nobody, that's going to be the secret joke of our show, is no one is going to know what your name actually is.
Nope.
I know what it is. Mr. IBS.
That's sad.
IBS man to the rescue.
So that is why you weren't on the show, right? Is because you IBS'd so bad that you passed out on the couch.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sitting on the can and my anus just exploded.
Wow. So it's like castle pressures.
No, actually, I wasn't feeling good last week and forgot to check my email and didn't find out that the recording got moved up a day. So, yeah,
poor
that's
shame.
My bad.
Yeah.
Hey, wait, I have a really exciting announcement besides the fact that it's so exciting that Blue is back. I have an even more exciting announcement.
Okay.
What's that?
We have a Facebook page, which is tech-gaming.com, and you should go to it and you should like us, because the more you like us, the more other people will like us too. So you should go check us out. And you can send us pictures, and if they're awesome, maybe we'll post them.
Yeah. No nudes.
This was going to be an outro, but
I wanted to announce it now. I was too excited.
A little premature action.
I'm sorry. Next time I'll wait longer, I promise.
That's all right. Well, while you wait, tell us what you've been playing.
Well, as you may know, I just started law school again this week, so it's been quite a hectic week. And sadly, for all our listeners, all I've really been able to play is Skyrim and Halo, which is not exciting things to talk about.
Wait,
so,
Halo Anniversary or Halo, other Halo?
No, well, a little bit. I was playing with some people who were not super familiar with the game, so we played some zombie rounds and some squad teams because that was easier for them. We did a little bit of Anniversary stuff, but not much.
Mm-hmm. But it was the Halo Anniversary. It wasn't like Reach or 3 or 2.
Oh, no, it was Reach. It was Reach, but they have Anniversary game types on it.
Okay,
so.
I understand.
Isn't the Anniversary already on clearance at Target?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I had no desire to look into it at all, I will say that. And I'm someone who actually plays Halo.
I've actually heard it is really, really well done.
Really?
Yeah, I was one of the people who was a big naysayer. You know, it's the new studio and everything, but I've heard that it's really, really well done, and if you really like the first game, and that it's worth going back and playing it.
I just think it hasn't aged very well at all. I bought it, played it, and first-person shooters have come a long way since Halo came back.
That's true, but the people who played a lot of Halo back in the day, it is an entirely different game, and the things they changed may seem nuanced, but over time, going back to that, it's almost fun just to see how it was.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I'm going to go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say, it's also like people who go back and play GoldenEye, you know, like, first-person shooters have come a long way, but GoldenEye is still going to be GoldenEye.
Sure.
Another thing is that different versions of Halo had different uniquenesses just based off the fact that they were sort of different games, and so the strategy and the gameplay, like, in online multiplayer is a bit different. Like, I mean, they kept after Halo 3 came out, they kept the Halo 2 servers going for, like, how long was it? Like years?
A really long time. It was really fun watching when they shut them down. They couldn't shut them down until everybody got offline. And there was, what was it, 7 guys who were playing a game until they kicked them off and it got down to 2. And that was really fun to watch.
And they stayed on it for like, because they would just take turns like all being on there and like leaving it on. And they had that going between the 7 of them for like a good almost year, I think.
No, it wasn't that long, but it was a while.
I thought it was like 10 months or something.
No, it was a matter of weeks, but when you figure that they had to continue to be moving for so long,
that's true.
That's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, did you play anything else? Skyrim and Halo. That's it.
Um, Skyrim, Halo, Bastion. I played a little more Bastion. I've already talked about it. It's awesome. Go buy it. It's great. Bastion is nothing like Halo, as the term
sounds like
completely
the
different
Lunar
game.
There you have it, folks. Bastion, nothing like Halo.
There you go.
Definitive answer. I had that question. I was wondering how much like Halo it was. Blue, you've had like 3 months since the last time we recorded an episode that you've played stuff. What'd you play?
Well, for starters, I mean, at Christmas I got Skyrim, WWE 12, and like a laundry list of other games. And I'll start with WWE 12. I gotta say that game has pleasantly surprised me. You know, I mean, I like the SmackDown games. I've always liked the SmackDown games, but they haven't really, I don't know, they haven't reached that same level as like a No Mercy or a WrestleMania 2000 from the Nintendo 64 days.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's still true to a certain extent with WWE 12, it's, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. It's like WWE 12 is the No Mercy of sports entertainment. If it makes sense. It's like the camera angles that the WWE uses on TV, they at THQ went and met with the production team and copied those camera angles and put them into the games, or into the game as, you know, replay cameras and stuff like that. And combining that with like all the TV show bumpers and like the little graphics that play like at the beginning of the pay-per-views and stuff like that, and, you know, like, now WrestleMania, and has like the logo and like the fancy computer animated graphic. But yeah, I mean, as far as the gameplay of WWE 12 goes, I've noticed that I didn't play SmackDown vs. Raw 2011, 2010. I think the most recent one I played was like 2009 or something like that. And the characters feel a lot slower, more methodically paced, as opposed to the kind of arcadey movement of previous games where you hit the button and it's like halfway across the ring and in a blink of an eye. And I mean if you're used to the SmackDown franchise, you might think that the game feels a little bit sluggish at first, but once you actually, you know, sit down and, you know, play a couple of matches with it, you'll find that it actually makes the game feel a little bit more like the WWE TV series, so the gameplay feel like the WWE TV series. And I mean, WWE 12 has, I mean, it truly has nailed the WWE feel. I mean, you got Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler doing commentary like always and stuff like that. But I mean, the Road to WrestleMania mode, if you want proof that it's definitely based on the WWE. There's a story mode with Triple H where he basically overcomes the odds, tears a quad again, and proceeds to bury the younger talent by beating the crap out of him. It's basically just like the WWE.
I thought the story mode was some guy, what was his name? Jacob Cass. He was voiced by one of the guys from TNA Wrestling.
Jacob Kaz.
That's the, you know, fake name for the guy, the career.
Well, actually, from what I've played, basically, when you start out the career, you have, it looks like you're going to control John Cena as he's going to the ring and showing him warming up backstage and standing behind, the Titantron, getting ready to walk out.
Mm-hmm.
And game takes a a curve. And
gives you the five knuckle shuffle.
Yeah. And Sheamus actually attacks him from behind, and the story mode from there
switches.
You're controlling Sheamus, which, if you haven't seen Sheamus, he is a ghost white, bright orange Irish guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is an actual WWE superstar. He is incredibly pale. He has, you know, the orange hair, or, you know, reddish hair, or however you want to view it. And basically, it will be a little bit spoilerific for the next minute or so, but you know, basically, Wade Barrett isn't happy on SmackDown, and SmackDown and Raw are going to be fighting together, fighting against each other at a pay-per-view. So Wade Barrett turns on the SmackDown team, and a couple of the guys from the Raw team turn on, like, Edge, I think was, and somebody like that. And they form, like, this super faction called the United Kingdom, along with,
Whoa, wait. United Kingdom?
United Kingdom.
Really? UK,
Sean. Yeah, really. I get that. Really?
See, it's Scotland and Ireland and England all put together. Isn't that
living together in harmony? No.
Are they at least like stereotypes of the different areas of the United Kingdom?
Well, it does feature William Regal, which I guess you could kind of call him a stereotype. I mean, he does have the accent, and at one point he was the commissioner, and he was drinking tea and stuff like that. And
is William the British Regal's, Bulldog in there?
That's a good question. I haven't unlocked him yet. I don't know if he's in there or not.
Wait, is he still a thing? Because he was wrestling when I was, like, 12.
British Bulldog?
Yeah.
Yeah, he passed away several years ago.
Ooh, way to go, Sean. You're a douche.
No, it's okay. A lot of wrestlers have died lately. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, but only really one of them is. Came back to life as a nightmare dragon.
That Macho Man mod for Skyrim is awesome. Mm-hmm. But the biggest glitch that I've found is that The Undertaker's entrance, and keep in mind, this is The Undertaker, one of the most popular stars in the WWE, somebody who is basically infamous for his evil entrance. You know, he's, you know, got the flames and the lightning and stuff like that. It's like one of the best entrances in wrestling. And unfortunately, his entrance causes a visual glitch, or a graphical glitch, excuse me, with the texture on the ring. And basically, it's like before, you know, basically they have like the texture for the ring that's like four squares repeated, you know, side by side by side. And, it'll cause like one or two of the textures for the ring to go completely black or faded, and then have it like kind of shift depending on like when somebody gets attacked or, you know, body slammed or whatever. And it's incredibly annoying, and it's not the sort of thing that goes away after the match is over. You actually have to reset the entire game to get the glitch to go away. If you go into another match, it's going to be there. Another match after that, it keeps going.
That's bad.
Yeah,
that
and
Undertaker, he's not fucking around.
He hasn't been on TV in almost a year, and he's still bringing hell.
Yeah, turn it.
But
turn the thing is black.
And the thing is, the game's been out since November, and as to the best of my knowledge, the glitch is still in the game. They can release paid DLC for it, but they can't fix the fucking ring. I mean,
well, the paid DLC is planned ahead of time, and let's be honest, there's going to be a WWE 13, so any fixes they'll just add into that.
Really, Sean? You think? Okay. Hopefully THQ will be around. They're not doing so well right now.
I think they'll be around. I really think they'll be bought. I keep meaning to buy their stock so that when somebody buys them, I can profit. Because they're down to 60 cents a share from $6 a share in the beginning of the year.
Wow. Wait, the beginning of the year? Days ago?
No, beginning of 2011, they were over $6 a share. Now they're at less than 60 cents, I believe.
Speaking of WWE, is Sergeant Slaughter in the game?
Not to my knowledge. I know Vader is. I've heard that he's going to be in the story mode. I'm not sure if he's actually going to like say anything with you know, if they brought him in to record any voices or anything, but he is unlocked through the story mode. And I know Demolition, you know, Axe and Smasher in there, Hawk and Animal, the Road Warriors, Legion of Doom, whatever.
So you say Warriors, and I think of Wheel Warriors.
But yeah, I mean, WWE 12, if you can get it for $30, I mean, I think you'd, I mean, if you're a hardcore WWE fan, I think you'll definitely be happy with it. Presentation-wise, it's the best SmackDown game that I've played, easily. But yeah, I mean, honestly,
do you think it's the best game for someone to start out with who is not like you said, if you're a big, you know, WWE fan, if you're not a big WWE fan, do you think it's like a better one of all the ones that you could go to?
Glitches aside, I think it's definitely worth looking into. The universe mode has, you know, limitless potential. Basically, you have like a never-ending calendar of WWE events, and you can, it's kind of like a combination of like general manager or be the booker mode or what, and like a season mode. And mm-hmm. you can book title matches, you can substitute someone in one match for somebody else, and I mean, it's a neat mode, and it's endless, so there's a lot of replay potential there. The story mode, I mean, it's worth playing. I mean, it's not terrible or anything, but mm-hmm. if you're a fan of the current WWE and you don't play WWE video games, this would probably be a great place to start if a Nintendo 64 isn't something too easy to come by.
Mm. So what else have you played? We can talk about that for 20 minutes.
Tablet talk. Another thing I've been playing, for Christmas I got Dissidia Final Fantasy, the first one. I think I mentioned it 2 weeks ago, something like that. Got it at the Best Buy sale. And I really like that. I played the demo for it for a couple of months ago when I first got the PSP, and when I actually sat down and played it, I've always liked the Final Fantasy games, but I've liked the characters of the Final Fantasy games, but I find the games themselves to be a little bit too, I don't know, I don't want to use the word complicated, but it just seems like there's always some unnecessary gameplay gimmick that they add to the RPG elements that makes it a little bit frustrating if you, like, mess it up somehow, like with Final Fantasy 10. They had the sphere grid, which basically turned leveling into this non-linear thing where you can go this way and then hit this gym, that gym, and yada, yada, yada. And I ended up screwing up my sphere grid, and I got stuck numerous points in 10, and I'm still working on it, really. But, you know, I'd have to do 10 or 12 hours of grinding just to make up for the mistake I made on the grid. I mean, I got stuck two or three times like that. I've always had problems like that with the Final Fantasy games. So just playing as these characters in a fighting game, an action fighting game, that's already a plus. And when you're adding in, you know, leveling, and I mean, it's a decent story mode from what I've played of it. I mean, it makes it well worth the $5.
Whoa, that's a great deal.
Yeah, and, you know, when I was in GameStop a few days ago, you know, I was checking out the guys. I was actually trying to, and that was guides, not guys. I just wanted to make sure. I was looking up I was trying to find the strategy guide for WWE 12, you know, just see how much it was or whatever. And I came across the guide for Duodecim, the sequel to Dissidia.
Yeah.
And I looked at it, and I did a double take when I looked at the price sticker, because it said 1 cent on it. And now I've heard of penny guides. You know, the ones that they're getting ready to send them to the trash bin or whatever. But I've never actually, it's been eons since I've actually seen them in person. I think the last time was like, I got like a third party guide to WWF Attitude. I mean, it's,
we talked about that on the show last week, because I almost bought a Fear 3 guide just because it was only a penny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I have no interest in that game whatsoever. It was just there and it was a penny, and I was like, yeah, like,
and I said how stupid that was, because it's not even worth a penny. Because you don't need it. Not because Fear 3 is bad, because you don't really need a guide to play it. Like, I can't see why you would need a guide, unless you're just hopeless.
But if it's worth, you know, reading material, maybe give you something.
For me,
it's a penny. Come on.
And plus,
there's
I mean,
a million things you could read in the bathroom that are better than that, and I only want so many reading materials in the bathroom.
But you know what? If you're wrapping a gift, you could throw it through the shredder, and then you've got really cheap...
Confetti!
Well, you've got cheap packing supplies, so...
True. That's true. Fine. Basically, right, it's worth a fucking penny.
Plus, if you have, you know, like a used media store where you can trade stuff in, I mean, you can get turn that penny into a couple of bucks.
At least a nickel.
That actually is true. The game store by me gives $1 for guides. So.
Wow. You could buy some THQ stock, at least 3 shares.
But actually, I mean, it's like I saw the Dissidia guide for a penny, and I mean, I'm not going to leave that just sitting there. So I grabbed it and walked up to the counter and I asked the guy, is this right? And he says, yeah, we're clearing it out or something to that effect. And, I said, I'll take it. And he says, yeah, just have it. And basically I got a freebie from GameStop and I'm just like,
really? I did that with the Metal Gear Acid thing a long time ago. It basically comes down to it costs more for them to ring it up than it does for them just to give it to you if they're selling it for a penny.
And the thing was, I didn't have Duodecim, but I figured, you know, I'm liking the first Dissidia, so
you know what they should do is have a promotion where you buy a game, here's a rack of guides, pick one out for free. You know, kind of a bonus.
Yeah, that's the only way. That's the only way Prime is going to stay in business at this point is if they work some sort of deal like that. Because I cannot believe people buy those for anything other than art books.
Mm-hmm. I've been drooling over that hardback Skyrim guy that's like about an inch and a half or 2 inches thick.
Mm-hmm.
See, I feel like Skyrim for me is like Demon's Souls, where as soon as you start looking stuff up for it, it ruins the whole experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's one problem I usually have with strategy guides. I mean, I haven't bought a guide in eons. I think the last guide I got was actually for Zelda Wind Waker, and that was because I pre-ordered at Kmart or something like that. And, but, you know, I mean, I saw it. I figured, you know, what the hell? I mean, it's you know, at least worth a penny.
Does anyone give out what they called were game guides, and they were like 4-page pamphlets. It would say free mini guide with game purchase or pre-order.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those? They were totally worthless.
They did that with Monster Hunter Tri. If you pre-ordered it and got the demo, it came with a little 4-page game guide getting started with Monster Hunter.
Page one means, you know, was turning on your console.
Yeah.
Page two was the controls, and page three was the modes, and page four was all the copyright information.
Pro tip, use health potions if you don't die. Thanks, guys.
As much as I love guides, I also love Robert Allen.
Wow, thank you, Sean.
So
Sean,
much I got so. A question for you. I have an answer.
Play Asura's Wrath.
Asura's Wrath. The demo. I downloaded it, but I was playing Choplifter, so I did not.
Okay, well... you guys may know that Asura, it's a joint project between Game Connect 2 and Capcom. I don't know who or what Game Connect 1 is, but Game Connect 2 was responsible for Solo Turbo, Tail Concerto, some of the Naruto games, the Dot Hack series. Pretty good, you know, resume they got there. So I expected some pretty great things, and, well, what I got out of the demo was interesting, but probably not enough to make me go out and plunk $5.
Well, you also didn't like Saints Row the Third, and it sounds like this is up that same alley. It's sort of avant-garde, mm-hmm. This is a game, and
Saints
holy
Rose?
Fuck, we are going to motherfucking... this is a game. This is not an art project. This is not classy. This is... Mm-hmm. We are video gaming the hell out of this. And that seems
actually,
like what both those games go for.
It's not a game. It's more of a visual novel. More than anything else, because I couldn't... I didn't actually try hard to lose, but I didn't lose. I didn't die. I never felt threatened by it. Mm-hmm. So the demo, it's got two stages, chapters, I believe 5 and 11, which from their length, they may be subsets of different chapters. In the first, you're fighting this giant god, you know, like statue, And he eventually grows as big as the Earth, which is kind of the demo's virtue. The sense of scale in the game is just wonderfully wacky. Like many, you know, like Japanese anime or Takashi Miike's Dead or Alive movies, the game is just so over the top. It just throws reality out the window, you know, across the town, into space, out of the galaxy, and just, you know, right out of the world.
Isn't that the one where like there's this giant god and he's about to smush somebody with his finger, but the guy's actually holding it back or something like that?
That's totally it. In the game, one of the things is you battle with this god, and it's a series of quick time events, and it eventually builds up this meter, which unleashes this perverse fury. So in the first section, you punch a god right into space, and then he grows to the side of the Earth, and he's kind of hanging out by the Earth, and he just uses his finger, just his index finger, and he re-enters the atmosphere. You know, it's kind of glowing, and the tip of it he's using to try to smash the protagonist just like a crumb. So you do all these different sorts of QTEs, and they're incredibly easy. Yeah, yeah. Sage.
So he's E.T.?
No. Well, he's giant E.T.
So he's giant
super
E.T.
Giant E.T. Imagine, like, one of the guys from God of War, like a Japanese God of War, like, huge. But the way he moves is kind of cool because it's slow, but you still get a sense of power. And so you do all these really, really simple QTEs. It's like you can't screw them up. Oftentimes, you know, the first time a QTE comes up for a game, it says, you know, press the button now. I'll screw it up. But, you know, almost every time, even if I totally blow it, it says good or wonderful or excellent, things like that. So you build up enough, power. And then you kind of strike his finger like a needle with so much ferocity that it ends up killing him. And what's interesting, I'm talking about the events rather than the game. And that's because it really did feel like a visual novel. There wasn't much playability to it. It was
there was an interview, I want to say it was with the guy who did El Shaddai, where he was talking about there's sort of a new concept in Japanese demos where you make the demo as simple as possible so you don't put people off by the it basically is supposed to be something that you almost watch so that they're not put off by a difficulty curve before they even get started.
Maybe that's it, but I didn't even see enough gameplay mechanics in there to feel like a normal fighting game. In the second go-around, the second chapter, there's some movement and things like that, but it really felt so simplistic that the enjoyment was watching the story and just how outrageous the sense of scale was than the actual game itself. And I anticipate this is going to get crucified by the gaming press.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure. But regardless, I'm kind of eager to rent the game and just experience the storyline. I really think it's a story-based game. The action, the gameplay itself, there's nothing really to it.
I don't think that's necessarily. I don't know. I think that the gaming press kind of likes that kind of stuff, but I don't know.
We'll see. I bet, Metacritic, right here, it will not get above a 70. You want to take
really?
That bet?
Really? I will take that. Above a 70? I will easily take that bet.
Okay. Awesome.
All right, it's on. You heard it
68,
here.
And I'm getting a free lunch. So, anyway, Sean, I knew you did play some Choplifter HD.
I did.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Choplifter HD, it's the latest sequel. I know there are a couple. I played a couple to the 1982. It's the Apple II classic where you fly this helicopter around. You pick up these civilians, bring them to safety. And occasionally you battle things like tanks, missiles. And I think in the original there was this floating mine. I know in the Sega arcade game they changed some things around. But
I don't remember there being quite so much to shoot at in Choplifter.
There was, but that wasn't the emphasis in the original one. The emphasis was always, you know, rescuing the people. But I think that the most memorable aspect of the game was its control scheme, where your helicopter felt like it was just flighty enough to simulate the challenge of flying a real helicopter under hostile conditions. This one, it's pretty easy. They kind of took that element out. In Exile is the developer. They also did Hunted, Demon's Forge, and the 2004 version of Bard's Tale. And so they helmed this remake. And there were a couple things right off the bat that bothered me. And I want to see if Sean, that you noticed them too. One, with the default control scheme, I didn't go into the options to check it, but use a button to aim at targets in both the foreground and in this other kind of immediate plane there. And the same button also directs, and I played on the 360, directs your shifts the direction of your copter. Mm-hmm. And it's used to shift between the two planes. Although, you know, it's not essential. I feel like your copter is quickest when it's facing, you know, forward the direction you're going. And so mapping those buttons to both, you know, the change in target and moving your helicopters seem like a not-so-hot decision.
Well, I think anything to make such a simple concept more complicated was a bad decision.
Okay.
That's exactly what it did.
Okay. It's just, it should have been mapped to two different, you know, we got triggers on the top, triggers on the bottom. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the plane along the bottom, at least for me, is too far down, and so the enemies are occasionally off screen.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice that?
Notice that.
Okay, so off screen, some of them come on screen, so that's a little bit, you know, forgive that, but when you got guys already stationed off screen, that's a big no-no. But that said, once you get past the real slow, benign kind of introductory levels, there's like three or four of them, the game starts getting fun, and it helps.
Yeah, I didn't get that far, and I only got, last night I only had time to do like three stages, but.
Okay, once you pass kind of the zombies, and there's some more, it throws in a little bit of humor. You do things like you slice up chickens and the rotor blades.
I thought that was so dumb.
Well,
no offense, I thought, like, because you do it in the first level, it's the first thing you do as soon as you land, like, chickens get chopped up. You're like,
okay, maybe I didn't like it then, but I think later on when it was just kind of accidental, like incidental damage, it was a lot more fun. One thing I did like was when you bang into something mm-hmm. and with your helicopter and you have like a civvy and they fall out screaming,
mm-hmm.
that is fun almost every time.
I think the voice acting on the people
voice acting's terrible.
It's so funny. Like, have you seen Dinosaur Office?
Dinosaur Office.
It's one of the free videos you can watch on the 3DS, but it's also online. But it's basically like this, like, they'll do 5-minute episodes of this claymation Dinosaur Office, and the way everybody talks is, they talk like this.
Right, yeah.
Let's go to the water cooler. And that's how everybody talks in that game. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to recommend you for a promotion. Thank you for saving me.
Yeah, it is repetitive. I'm not sure if it's tongue-in-cheek, but, yeah, it's not very good. But the zombie level is kind of fun, and there are some amusing things. I think, you know, less amusing for me was the, like I said, the voice actors and the typos on the loading screen.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, maybe I take that back. Typos are funny.
Well, I think it was weird how, like, the first first level you go and save that – or not save. You go and, like, schlep the reporter from one side of the stage to the other just to kind of show you.
And you do that a lot.
Yeah, but it's funny because, like
– every stage has that damn reporter.
Yeah, and that becomes, like, a thing over the course of the game is that, like, you don't like the reporter.
Right.
And like – even a couple levels in, you can understand why. Okay, he's a pain in the ass. You know, he's in this war zone. He's being a douche. My dad has all kinds of stories about, you know, in Iraq having to go save reporters who go get themselves in trouble. But it's like in the first level, it's like, go pick up this reporter and put him on this building. And you land and you're like, risk your life and I'm doing a thank you. And it's like, you didn't risk your life. You're a helicopter pilot in the city. You look like you're flying a news chopper. You're not risking anything. And then it's like, over after a while, that makes sense. But it's like, you could have thought of something different for him to say in the first level, you know, so it builds up to that instead of just, hey, you're kind of a douche to everybody, especially this reporter.
Okay, now this was funny. I was taking my copter down one time, and I don't know, something hit it, and so I kind of went sideways, and so the rotor blades, you know, were spinning kind of at a diagonal, and I cut the reporter open. You know, knocked his head.
Oh, God.
And that was I thought that was kind of funny because the guy is such a douche.
So the best parts of the game are when you fucking kill civilians.
Oh, the guy's a douchey reporter.
Yeah, but you said your other favorite thing was dumping a civilian out so that they scream falling.
No, it's totally accidental. It's like you're flying around, there's like some low slung thing, and you're trying to avoid, you know, RPGs that are locked onto you. And so you hit this, you bump it, and then the guy will say some stupid thing like, you know, we got to watch out for concrete, and one of the guys just happens to fall out, and he's screaming. But it's done, it's not lifelike at all. It's done, you know, with a sense of comic relief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's not.
Yeah, you're saying, like, you're an asshole.
No, I was like, oh, okay, I understand.
It's so far removed from reality that it's cartoonish violence.
I would have rather the game been more cartoony, actually. Because, like, the presentation of it, it looks good, but it's just, like, so ridiculous that it doesn't go far enough. You know, I would almost rather be goofy and cartoony and just go over the top instead of, like, hey, it looks kind of, it's not all that stylized, it looks good.
But then, I understand that, but I think people would have said, well, this isn't Choplifter at all. Choplifter wasn't funny. And so I think they had to straddle that line because some people would say, well, it's not, you know, it's not exactly a sequel, it's not a remake at that point. But I do think it looks, if you look at, you know, how like rubbery, shiny your helicopter looks, it does look kind of almost comical at times. Anyway, Zen Pinball HD, which, let me tell you a little story. I downloaded that, and I, for some one reason or another, I had my 3DS, the depth slider, all the way down. And when I first booted that up, I thought, oh my god, this is terrible. Like, small screen, I just can't see, you know, anything. I can't make out the features on the table. I can't play it at all. And for whatever reason, I almost backed out and just quit. I turned up the 3D slider, and it is night and day, like no other 3DS game. And it is, I've been playing, you know, all four tables. There's, unfortunately, there are rehashes on some of the PlayStation, some of the earlier tables from Zen Pin. There's Excalibur, Shaman, Earth Defense, and El Dorado. A lot of people played it, but once you turn the 3D slider up, the table, it's like this screen, it's like you're looking into a little window. All the features kind of come out, and it gives it a sense of depth, and it really looks cool. And it's a lot of fun to play.
So this is just a remake of the PS3 version then, right?
It is, but the 3D,
There's 3D in the PS3 version, though.
Oh, there is? I've never seen it.
I mean, you don't have a TV, but I'm just saying. I'm almost 100% that there's some support for that.
But with this, with the small screen, you really need the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, you know, so that the objects come out. And it becomes, you know, where it was this big cluttered mess, all of a sudden it looks like a pinball table, where it looks almost photorealistic.
That's pretty impressive. I wouldn't have thought that it would have been rewarding to play a pinball game on a 3DS.
Yeah, especially for a downloadable title. I mean, this is a killer app for the eShop. $6.99, $7. And so,
yeah.
It seems like it almost plays like a cartridge. There's a little bit of load time, but there's great, you know, leaderboard support in it. You don't have to have a friend's code. You can see, you know, your worldwide standings by country. It really is good and surprisingly well done. I keep hearing, and one of our readers commented on another 3DS eShop game, Pushmel. They said, why didn't you review that? And I need to check that one out. But as far as I can tell, this is the reason to venture forward to the eShop. So.
Did you pick up the Williams Pinball Collection when that came out for the 3DS?
I did not. I did play it a little bit, and I wasn't happy. One of the things I need for a pinball game is a solid frame rate, and it did not have that. And so it was terribly
disappointing. Let's be honest. One thing you need for any game is a solid frame rate.
True.
Sean's just poking fun at me, but no, I think for pinball, you need that. It's all timing. Making those shots and things like that. And last thing I've been playing is Space Marine, which is Dynasty Warriors
with guns.
With guns, and I really liked it. And it's just fun. It's a little on the simple side, but it's one of those things where it's enjoyable.
Have you tried playing it online at all?
No, I have not.
If you can get a match going, it's really fun online.
Really? I'm having a lot of fun with the single player. Just good, simple, mindless fun. And, I don't know, dig it.
Yeah. I think it's harder to, like I said this in the review, I got a lot more out of it being into the lore.
Yeah.
There's a part, How far are you into it?
I don't know, 3-4 stages in.
There's a part.
Is this
maybe
a spoiler
eight stages
alert?
In. It's kind of spoiler, but there's a part 8 stages in where I was like, "Whoa, this is the coolest thing ever!" Where it's two, I'll just say two NPCs are fighting, And it's like, if you know, like, what's going on, it's so cool. But I feel like if you just see, hey, this boss is fighting that boss, it's just like any other video game. But, like, for me, it was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. I've been waiting my whole life for this.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That John was waiting his whole life or something? Or?
Well, yes, since I was 12. I think that's how old I was.
You'll have to explain it to me because I'll totally miss it. I'll be like, oh, it's two NPCs.
It's pretty hard to miss. So you've probably seen the war boss by now, right?
Yep.
Okay, so the war boss gets into a fight with this other dude, and it's pretty cool.
Okay.
Anyway.
You know what? One thing, and you're going to hate me for it, though, Sean, is I am getting a little sick of guys with big suits of armor on.
Whatever, they were the original guys with big suits of armor. Okay, they kind of knew that shit.
I told you to get mad. But, I just want, like, crisis-type fitting armor. No,
you would.
Hipster armor.
You
would. Hipster armor? You mean, like, the kind that, like, hang below the booty?
He wants the ball crusher armor.
Those high notes.
He wants his Space Marines chafed. I mean, those type of armies exist in that universe. I mean, like the Eldar or the Tau. Okay. They're just not as cool as Space Marines because Space Marines are the shit.
Okay. No, I'm just saying visually, coming from that perspective, just like I'm a little tired of looking at these guys with huge suits of armor that it's almost, you know, borderline mech-like at this point.
Well, they are borderline mech-like. Did you see how big they were in comparison to the guardsmen?
Yeah.
Like 8 feet tall. They're huge.
Yeah.
So did you play anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, I
just want to rile you up.
I played Choplifter.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you think? I talked a little bit about.
Like I said, I'm only like three stages in. Landing was a lot easier than I remember it being. Okay, I want to force myself to crash a couple times to make sure you still can. Because I had some pretty rough landings that I didn't think I was going to make it, and it's just fine.
Yeah.
But
it gets a lot better, like I said. The first three levels are almost throwaway. And it kind of worried me because here's a $15 game, and there are, I don't know how many levels, maybe 30 levels altogether from what I've seen, what I've opened up. And to blow three of them on a kind of tutorial.
Yeah, it really was. Just did you say tutorial?
Tutorial. Sorry.
Tutorial. But I also played Back to the Future since I have that. Yeah, that was free for PlayStation Plus people.
I have the disc.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, because you paid like $40 for that, didn't you?
No, I paid $10.
No, that's not bad. It's got a really good story and everything, but it's weird.
I've heard it also has a really good Marty McFly impersonator as well.
Yeah, he's really, really good. That's one of the things I really noticed. But it's interesting because from the outside looking in when this came out, a lot of the podcasts and articles I was reading were really excited about it. First episode came out. Everyone wanted to talk about it. Second episode came out. You know, people were like, oh, well, I got to finish up the first one, and then I'll get around to it. Third episode came out. People talked about it a little bit, and then I never heard anything about the fourth and fifth episode. Mm. And then Jurassic Park came out and got panned. And it's really interesting to watch kind of the Telltale legacy where they had Sam and Max come out, maybe, 8 years ago? Was that?
No, Sam and Max originally came out over 10 years
ago. No, the Telltale one.
Oh.
The first Sam and Max from Telltale.
Oh, I don't know. I just know I played the original.
Because they haven't
about 2005, 2006, something like that, maybe?
That sounds about right. I'll say 2005 without looking it up. But they haven't done anything with the core of their game since then because they've been developing for the Wii, and they don't want to screw that up. But it seems like as they start pumping stuff out more and more. They've really let themselves slip. And the fact that they have kind of an old, dated, kind of almost ugly-looking engine, and it's so glitchy, it really shows. And I can definitely see why, if Jurassic Park was the next step in that, why so many people didn't like it. Because there are some things, like, whenever you boot up the third and fourth and fifth episode, the song in the menu skips. It controls really weird. And it's sad because it's a really good game. I mean, the story is really, really fun. It's funny because my girlfriend will sit there and watch me play, and she doesn't want me to play when she has to concentrate on something because she's, like, really into the story now. Except for the third episode was really slow. But, you know, it's hard to control at points. There will be parts where you need to walk across a room to get somewhere, and the act of walking across the room is unbearable because you don't know which way you're supposed to point the analog to go left because it's not always intuitive. And you can just see, you know, like I said, if Jurassic Park is more of that, I think it's telling that people finally got fed up with it. So here's to hoping that Telltale scraps that before they move forward. Because I know they've got, like, I want to say 6 more licenses on their plate to develop for. You know, Walking Dead. I think they got the license to do another Monkey Island game. And they're just going to push those out. Mm-hmm. And if they do, I don't see them being around much longer.
Yeah.
So, here's to them. They really need to focus on structure.
Personally, I watched the original, the first season of Walking Dead, and lost interest relatively quickly.
I couldn't even get the interest. I love comics and everything, and mm-hmm. keeps telling me they're really good. I could not care less about The Walking Dead.
Well, then I tried again season 2, and oh god, it was horrible. It felt like a bad RPG where they were looking for fetch quests. every plot device in the book to kind of move it along was utilized.
Yeah.
And totally lost interest, and so much so that unless Walking Dead, you know, the adventure game got rave reviews, I would not be interested.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a dead license to me.
Yep.
And I've watched about 2 episodes of it myself, and I haven't given it a second thought since.
Yeah. It's a shame because I think the first episode was pretty strong. First, maybe 2.
I think it's hard to carry a zombie show very far.
Yep. Yeah.
But other than that, I played Dragon Age 2. I played it for every night for a good solid week and still have no idea what the story is, so I'll be returning that game. And
returning.
Well, probably trading in.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, that, like I said, played it every night for a week. I have no idea what the story is of that game. I got saved by a dragon lady at some point, and then I came into this town, and there are cutscenes every once in a while where they say I am a champion of something. And I've done a bunch of fetch quests, and I met an elf girl, and that's about it. The voice acting in that game is very good. Oh, and the combat is better than the first one, but still.
Oh, Sean, come on. That was a huge letdown. Come on. You go from tactical to that. Oh,
I didn't like the tactical thing. I mean, it's still tactical in this. It's just I don't want to have to fuss with that because every time I made a tactical decision in the first game, A, I didn't get listened to, and B, when by the time they did listen to me, they were running off and doing the wrong thing anyway. So it was frustrating for me, and so at least making the core combat part of that better was, like, leaps and bounds better for me, but at the same time, the game surrounding it was boring.
Okay. I thought the combat was 2 or 3 steps down in the original.
Yeah, see, but the core, like, hitting stuff felt good in this one. It didn't feel good in the first one. Mm. If hitting stuff doesn't feel good, I really don't care about the other parts of it.
I disagree. It was tapping the button repeatedly.
As opposed to tapping it once and just watching him.
Yeah. At least I enjoyed it.
No, there's something I've got to, when he swings, it's got to do something.
Okay.
I would like to see something more akin to White Knight Chronicles, where you're queuing up your attacks rather than just, hey, attack, and then every once in a while something will... I don't know, it was too MMO-y for me, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, that's all I've been playing, I think. More Golden Sun. That game is still good. The story is still cyclical. We still have an interview with Mr. John Lee from Raptor. He has a little-known fact. I don't know if you cover this in your review. He has a claw for a middle toe, and he has to buy special shoes for that.
He has a claw?
Huh?
He's a raptor.
Oh.
Hey guys, Desert Eagle here with John Lee, VP of Marketing at Raptor.com. That's R-A-P-T-R.com. So, John, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, I know the majority of hardcore gamers out there might be pretty familiar with Raptor, but I suspect that we may have a few recreational listeners who may not be as familiar with the service. Can you give us a brief overview? Yeah, that does happen. I was talking to somebody who never heard of Angry Birds yesterday.
What?
Yes, there are people out there.
You just get out of jail from North Korea? Or
yes. Because out of the gulag.
My mother has heard of Angry Birds by now. That's amazing. Well, you know, for Raptor, I can understand. I mean, we are still a startup. We kind of came out of stealth mode about a year or so ago. And unless you're in what I would consider like a trendsetter in the gaming industry, it's still probably new upon you. And our hope is that more people discover us this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about the service, like what it does and how it works?
Sure thing. In essence, it is a social network for gamers. Mm-hmm. Have about 11 million members who use us, who and what they love about this most is that we automatically track their gameplay stats, whether it's on Xbox, PS3, or PC. And when we track all that, we then showcase basically your rank and your status and how you're progressing as a gamer. And the whole site's designed around showcasing some really cool content to you based off of where you are in a game, whether it's, you know, you're stuck halfway through your new strategy guide or you're just playing a game and or if you're looking for deals. So the whole thing is designed around what I consider the gamer mentality, and we do what we can to try to capture that essence for all gamers.
Very cool. Now, one thing I've always been curious about is Raptor's origin. Can you tell me how the service was developed? I imagine somebody was sitting around kind of compiling his playtime, seeing how much time he logged into, I don't know, pre-Skyrim world, and deciding that the task was better served by a computer.
Yeah, you know, the company was founded by Dennis, affectionately known as Thresh for more core gamers. And he used to be a competitive gamer way back in the day and dominated on the Quake scene. And he's gone through different companies and startups. And the one before he did this was actually X-Fire. Mm-hmm. And X-Fire has some similarities to what we do, but was limited to just PC games. Mm-hmm. And we realized that the way the market is shaping up, that people – gamers, in essence, are cross-platform. Now, you play across, you know, multiple platforms, and you care about the games you play on those platforms. And there really wasn't a system that helped you sort of keep track of your gaming library, your progress across everything, and connect with friends on those platforms, too. Mm-hmm. And so it started off really simple. I mean, Raptor initially was just like a IM type of client. It had some cool features around chatting with friends, getting together, seeing what your friends are playing, and it basically exploded to a full-blown service of, you know, 101 features that, you know, help you get the most out of your games, really.
Very cool. Now, as a member of the service for some time, probably at least a year now, I noticed that occasionally my 360 playtime either gets over or undervalued by a couple minutes. Now, why does this happen?
Can you say that again? You actually broke up for a second.
Oh, sorry. Let me start over. As a member of the service for some time, I noticed that occasionally my 360 playtime either gets over or undervalued by a few minutes. Do you know what causes this to happen?
Probably 101 different possible things.
Right. What's the most likely of those?
It could be a different mix of things. Because, you know, different services update different types of software every now and then, it sometimes breaks how we do. You know, on our side. So if you see, like, you know, hours not tracked for a period, usually that's the reason. Okay. We have a pretty good crack team here that the minute anything is noticed, we get things back and running, usually within 24 to 48 hours. So it's pretty fast. Mm-hmm. If about a couple minutes here and there, and it simply has to do with just how tracking is done in general. We actually track down what I call like to the minutia second.
Sure.
It's in sort of like buckets, and based off of like, you know, how long you play, which sometimes we'll summarize, like you play for close to an hour, we'll say about an hour. Mm-hmm. If it's down to like, you know, 6 minutes, we'll be much more exact in that kind of scenario. But over time, what we've been pretty good about is on the aggregate level, it's been pretty accurate as a whole.
Very cool. Now, one thing I noticed is the Xbox 360 data is a little bit more robust than the PlayStation 3. A couple of things. Why is this, and will PS3 users see a change in the immediate future?
Well, what we do for the PS3 side is track trophies. Mm-hmm. And you're right. One of the things that is missing is around hours tracking specifically. I mean, that's specifically a policy from Sony side. And one of the things that we love more about Microsoft and why it's the tracking is much more robust is simply because they believe that, you know, having this data more open, mm-hmm. it's, you know, better for gamers. And there's a lot of other sites that take advantage of that kind of data. I do hope that Sony sees that as well. We are seeing movement towards them recognizing that a gamer cares about his stats and that he wants to be able to access that kind of data, whether on Sony or some other site. So, you know, we can hope that, you know, they'll eventually see that people care about this, and if more Raptor members, you know, ping their customer service, gets that message across, all the better too.
Mm-hmm. I would like to flaunt my Disgaea 4 playtime, show that off. So recently, Raptor was able to measure playtime and attitudes of two big competing games this past holiday season, Modern Warfare 3 and Battlefield 3. Can you give me just a brief summary of those findings?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to actually put together because. Mm-hmm. First time we didn't look at just the pure analytics of playtime, and that's really what we do best, right? Seeing what people play, what they stop playing, what platforms are on. We started to ask people questions about, like, you know, what game do they prefer, what has better design, what's a better developer. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is kind of pit the two top games of the year, right? Battlefield and Call of Duty. And so we would ask questions like, you know, which one has better multiplayer? Which one has better single player, which one has better developer? And the findings were actually absolutely fascinating, even though I think if you were a core gamer, you would just wholeheartedly agree, yes, this all makes sense. Mm-hmm. What it basically told us was that universally, everyone thinks that the Battlefield series is a better series, better gameplay, and better developer, DICE being that developer. Mm-hmm. When it actually came down to playtime, across the board, Modern Warfare 3 trumped Battlefield. Hmm. And it was surprising because typically, like, you know, when you think of Battlefield, everyone says that the multiplayer is better. Mm-hmm. And so invest more time into that. It's just not the case. The reality is when it came to even multiplayer, Call of Duty, you know, handily beat down Battlefield on that front as well. They're just investing a lot of time into it. And I think it's almost a sort of unfair comparison. And, you know, I know EA sort of set themselves up. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take down number one. We're going to be number one. It was clear that it's going to take them a couple years, and that Call of Duty is, at this point, a phenomenon.
Yeah, certainly. And now, hypothetically speaking, if EA or Activision were to approach you guys and ask, what can we do to make gamers more content with the next franchise iteration? Now, what would be your suggestion going off this data?
It's actually an interesting question, and, you know, we like to sort of speculate that all the time, just being core gamers, and sometimes because of the data, just because, you know, we like certain games. The reality is our data doesn't actually give us the kind of insight that goes deep into what I would consider specific user behavior around certain things. We can only tell how much time they're investing into specific things. Mm. For instance, we could tell at the last EA game that they really tried to say, like, was going to be the big first-person shooter. Remember Medal of Honor, and they were talking about how great it was. We quickly saw, actually, that people did not invest the time into their multiplayer section. Mm-hmm. It was far lower on average than indexing against some comparables. That told us that there was something fundamentally off. We don't know what it was, but it became evident, like, within about a week or two.
That a lot of things were off.
Yeah, you know, it kind of sucked, and it wasn't working for them. Mm-hmm. Really good at is seeing trends and seeing what's about to happen and giving sort of information on that type of stuff is about to happen. And, you know, not to say we're doing insider trading, although technically since we share the information for free, you could if you want to. But we knew up front before Madden, last year that it was actually indexing about 50% lower in terms of conversions from demo to the full game.
Hmm.
And we were saying this is a sign that there could be an issue. And sure enough, within a week after that, EA announced for the first time that they were going to mark down Madden within the first month of release. That's never happened really before for them. We start to see, like, for Homefront, even though, like, say, THQ really was hyping this to be the next game, we like this week that it wasn't shaping up to be that way either. Same thing with Duke Nukem. You know, this kind of data gives us interesting insight to what's about to happen, how people jump into it. But, yeah, I couldn't tell them specifically and tell them, like, yeah, Lara Croft needs bigger boobs or anything, like, because then it sells more. But although that's probably obvious.
Right. Well, they did make them smaller. Any contemporary, like, cutting edge trends that you're seeing right now as we speak?
It's an interesting question. You know, we literally are sitting on mounds and servers of terabytes of data. And so the questions that we want to ask sometimes aren't obvious. It's really about trying to figure out what to look at that becomes interesting. And so a lot of times what we do is try to react to what people are asking most around the industry. So, you know, like a couple months ago, the big question in the whole industry, and the core gamers are even curious, is Zynga going to ever go IPO, and is it really worth that, you know, insane valuation that they were commanding?
Mm-hmm.
Our insight data, we didn't sort of say one way or the other, but it painted a clear picture that, yes, they were very successful, and they had an amazing ability to convert people to being paid users. And they had an amazing ability to convert users from one game to the next. However, it also suggested that all their users were the same users. In other words, they were having a difficult time getting beyond that group of people. And it looked like they were tapped out. And sure enough, that seems to be playing out. And it's affecting, like, you know, how their performance is and their perception. I think the next thing for us that is probably the most interesting that we're going to probably tackle real soon is around Star Wars. That's a really big question with the public. Yeah, in my mind, if Star Wars really is what I consider the biggest gaming franchise out there, and they make this into an MMO, this should set the benchmark for how subscription games can perform ongoing. To me, it's a question of whether the subscription model can survive. And if Star Wars does well, then it says, okay, it is possible. But if it doesn't do well, and you're a new IP in the space, you know, good luck. I think hard challenge trying to convince people to pay a monthly subscription. So we're going to try to tackle that next. And I think for 2012, there's some interesting stuff about comparing, you know, consoles from PS3 versus Xbox versus, say, free-to-play games, which is, like, you know, exploding on the scene quite a bit right now, too.
Yeah, certainly. And now, one last question for you. If we get right down to it, now you had mentioned Modern Warfare 3 has got the playtime, Battlefield 3 has the kind of user backing, player backing there. If you were to evaluate each game on factors like the server reliability, the quality and speed that they, both Activision and EA push out the patches, and things like the amount of time gamers are spending playing each title, would there be a clear-cut winner?
You know, if you're telling me if Raptor data tells us that, it doesn't. I think it's probably more what you read on the net on Kotaku or some other
thing.
I'm in a big Battlefield fan, and I like a $2,000, actually it's more like $3,500, but I'll tell my wife, PC just to play that game, and I couldn't even jump into multiplayer for the first full week.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that screwed up of system on the PC side because of the whole Origin system that they got. And our data showed that. In fact, it was like playtime on the PC side for multiplayer is like half of console. It's just unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm one of those. So they had a lot of problems at launch. And I think it still remains a problem on the PC side for that because you have – this is a real strange roundabout system. I think across the board, though, both games have done really well in trying to support the community. And if anything, for me, what's most interesting about these games – is how they're now actually trying to build a real social network, a community around each of the games. Because as we see for those two, at least specifically, the amount of playtime people invest is way above norm.
Mm-hmm.
It tells me that people think of these games as if it's like a lifestyle, not even just a game anymore. And so for Activision to introduce more things that people care about, a way for people to connect, it all makes sense. In fact, it's almost our question, why aren't you doing this sooner? Like, turn this game into something more than just a game. And I think we're seeing that happen, which is pretty cool.
Hmm. Yeah, I said that was the last question, but something just popped into mind. Sure. Those season passes, how are those performing? Are those doing well? We're going to see more of those?
That's a darn good question. I think it's probably doing well enough for them to continue thinking about how to iterate and make it better. Mm-hmm. You know, I take it from this perspective, and you know, even when I being a gamer, I kind of kick myself as sort of admitting this, but we see on average a Call of Duty player plays 60 to 70 hours on average. And this is on an average scenario. Mm-hmm. For Activision to not find ways to capture more gamer mindshare and more revenue in some way, shape, or form, or offer more to users, that's a huge miss.
Yeah.
And they have to do something, and they just got to do it smart. So whether a season pass, that concept is right or wrong, I don't know. It feels a little off to me, but I do think they're on the right track, and they can think of something really cool to package in for a gamer that's offered all year round. Mm-hmm. That I can see a lot of people want to pay for it because they're clearly investing the time and resources and their own time to playing that game versus just about anything else.
Hmm. Fascinating. Well, thank you so much, John. I really appreciate you coming on the show, sharing some of your thoughts and some of Raptor's data with us.
Yeah, no, not a problem. It's always fascinating to talk about data in a way that doesn't make me fall asleep like I did in my stats class. I mean, this is, as gamers, this just seems really interesting. And mm-hmm. you should definitely stay tuned for some stuff that we have planned because we're really going to make our data much more robust so that, you know, allows more people to kind of access it and play around with it in ways that I think, you know, gets conversations like this going and you can start having fun debates about it.
So you heard it, guys. Check out what's coming out from Raptor.
Also gone, he can turn dinosaur. His head. I could have said he turns his head 360 degrees, like owls.
Who?
Are we owls, talking about? Owls are a type of raptor.
Who?
Owls?
Sean's not kidding.
Oh, I got it. All right.
Wow. Next hint. All right. Name the guy who played Newman in Jurassic Park.
Okay. Ready, set. Go. That was an interview.
Hey.
Interviews.
I don't want your shit, Robert. Desert Eagle happened.
Why are you blaming Robert? We all said shit.
Anyway, speaking of Robert's shit.
here comes the big hill being headed your way.
Let's have him ask us some questions and then give us answers that we can choose from. We call this bit a trivia.
We call this bitch trivia?
Sure.
Okay.
Bitch is back trivia?
John, I love you. Thank you for hosting.
Ready, guys? Question number one. Mention the name Dan Gorland to your average gamer, and two things come to mind, the original Choplifter and African music. But hardcore types will know Gorland contributed to another prominent title. Name it. A, Prince of Persia. B, James Bond 007 The Duel. C, Clax. Or D, Raid on Bungling Bay.
I'm going to go with Prince of Persia.
I'm going to say Clax.
Clax. I like saying Clax. Samurage.
I'm going to say 007.
Correct answer. Blue got it. Prince of Persia.
Damn it.
Yeah, yeah, baby.
But it's number the two. 90s, and there's time for Clax.
Yes, he hit the slogan. Number two, the original Choplifter also carries a remarkable distinction. What is it? A, it was the first million-selling Apple II game. B, it was one of the first few games to appear on computer first, then arcade. C, it was the first computer game to retail for $49.99. D, it was the first game to offer a recreation of post-Vietnam military actions.
That one.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to say it was the first game to appear on computer first and then arcade.
You would be correct, Sean.
Good. Damn it.
Awesome. So we know Shoplifter led the charge from computers to coin ops in the 80s Apple II game, which followed the helicopter into token-taking dens. Was it A, Star Blazer, B, Archon, C, Bile Stowed, yeah, that's right, or D, Load Runner?
I'm going to go with Load Runner.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Load Runner, too.
I agree.
That goes with the ship motif, Load Runner. Correct. All right, guys, Load Runner. Number four, beyond picking up hostages, that little copter has made its way on quite a few consoles. Name the system which the title hasn't appeared on. A, the Intellivision, B, the Atari 5200, C, ColecoVision, or D, Sega Master System.
Which one it hasn't been on?
Correct.
What was the first one?
Sage, when you take your law exams, do you ask for clarification?
Yes, actually, you are allowed to, but no, because they're much clearer, and I can read them.
Okay.
What, just say them all again, since Blue doesn't know the first one anyway. It's
Intellivision, Atari 5200, ColecoVision, Sega Master System.
I go with Intellivision.
Master System.
See, it's going to be either Intellivision or ColecoVision, and since you picked Intellivision, I'll go with ColecoVision.
You should have hopped on board that train.
Television. That cannot be fun to play that on ColecoVision. I mean, it would be even less fun to play it on Intellivision, but...
Yeah. Well, with the 5200, with that soggy little controller over there?
Soggy little controller would have been better than the Intellivision little pad.
I could not play anything on the 5200. So, I don't know. Number five, Choplifter has been referenced in other media. Name the two instances where the hostage rescuing helicopter was mentioned. A, The Hunt for Red October, the book. B, Amazing Spider-Man number 237, comic. C, Mario's Picross for the Game Boy cartridge. Or D, Andy, Buckner and Garcia's Pac-Man Fever album.
So name the two?
Yes, name the two. Hunt for Red October, Amazing Spider-Man number 237, Mario's Picross, and Buckner and Garcia's Pac-Man Fever.
I'm going to say B and C.
I'm going to say A and D.
I'm going to say B and D.
Correct answer, Hunt for Red October, A, and C, Mario's Picross.
So none of us got it right?
Everybody got some of it right.
But none of you got all of it right. And let me pass the torch on to Blue, who's got his amazing Blue trivia.
Oh, and it's a good one this week, I believe.
All right. Bring it.
All righty. With a brand new Twisted Metal game coming out soon for the PlayStation 3, I thought I would put your knowledge of the classic car combat franchise to the test.
Hey, Axel.
Which two of the following Twisted Metal series facts are actually fakes?
Sean's going to win.
You wrote the fact?
A. Metal singer Rob Zombie appears as a playable character in Twisted Metal 3, driving a fully armed version of his music video car, the Dragula. B. Twisted Metal 1's Crimson Fury featured a James Bond parody jingle that played whenever its laser beam special was fired. C. Twisted Metal Head-On Extra Twisted Edition for the PlayStation 2 featured a second, smaller Twisted Metal game called Twisted Metal Lost, which consisted of finished content from the canceled Twisted Metal Harbor City. D. The French government banned the sale of Twisted Metal 2 because of the game's ability to destroy the Eiffel Tower by planting a bomb.
Mon Dieu.
Or E.
Oh.
Or E. David Jaffe himself directed live-action ending videos for the original Twisted Metal that were later cut due to their lackluster quality. Pick two.
B and E.
I think it's A and E.
God, no, Rob Zombie was in it. Rob Zombie was in it.
His song was in it. Was he in it?
Are you saying which two are true or which two are not true?
Which two are fake?
Are fake.
God damn it.
I'm not so sure about the French, though.
was going to say 8.
I'm going James Bond.
Give me the options again.
A is Rob Zombie.
Mm-hmm.
B is Twisted Metal, one's Crimson Fury. Third one, C is Twisted Metal Lost. D is the band in France. And E is David Jaffe directing live action videos.
I'm going to say D and C.
You guys need to jump on board the B train with me.
Fine, D and B then.
No, I'm pretty sure B is right. I think it's A.
Really?
And, yeah, I think it's A and D.
I'm saying C and D, goddammit.
And Sean, you nailed it. It's
what?
A and D.
What? I've seen the live action Dave Jaffe things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rob Zombie was in Twisted Metal as a playable character, but he was in Twisted Metal 4.
Oh. No. Yeah, which character is the James Bond parody?
That would be, it was the red Lamborghini in the first game. It would play like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Whenever you'd fire its like laser beam special weapon.
Oh.
Twisted Metal Lost, which was formerly known as Harbor City, and that got canceled around the time 6 of the development staff got killed in an accident, I believe. And yeah, David Jaffe directed the original ending videos for Twisted Metal that got cut, and they were included with Twisted Metal head-on extended,
yeah.
Or extra Twisted Edition,
yep.
Which are definitely worth checking out because they are laughably bad.
That was confusing.
It's pick two!
Yeah, but it's pick two that are not manned. You know how hard that is to keep straight shit.
Don't know Twisted Metal. It's not my fault you don't know Twisted Metal. I demand that you play every Twisted Metal game this next week.
Okay, one, I've played 2 or 3 different ones, one. And two, that's all that's worth playing, okay? Punk, tell me what to play.
I'm looking at the back of the box for a head-on, and it says never released win end movies from the original Twisted Metal. Okay, yeah, Boo's right. He's not a punk. That's what I'm saying.
He is a punk. I'm not saying he's not right. I'm just saying he's a punk.
I'm just saying he threw me off with the Lamborghini. James Bond.
It was actually Crimson Fury was. I tried to figure out a way to work in the fact that its driver was Agent Stone, and that was he was a secret agent, and that would be where the James Bond parody jingle would come from.
Was he British?
That I do not know. I didn't see. I didn't check his or read his entire profile.
Yeah.
His vitals. I wasn't sure.
Is he part of MI5, 4, or something?
Anyway, time for us.
Bitter trivia.
To answer the mailbag questions.
Mailbag. Can we from now on have a douchebag mailbag question? Like one question that's douchey.
If we get enough douchey questions in, I'm
that's
sure
what
now
your
we
co-hosts
will.
Are for.
Anyway, we got to run through these though because
don't take my job, damn it. Sorry,
I'm kind of running behind. Brainy B asks, I like strategy games more than action titles, and I noticed that on console there are not as many good tactical games coming out. Since I really don't like to play games on PC, do you have any options for me?
Disgaea 4,
Valkyria Chronicles, End War is actually not that bad.
Record of Agorist? War, a strategy RPG.
Mm-hmm. Is that the one we reviewed, Deagle?
I reviewed that one. Maybe we did. Yeah, maybe we did together. Yeah,
that one was okay. I thought it was a little sterile, but other than that, it was okay.
And the prequel came out, too. Don't forget Civilization Revolution. You can probably score it for next to nothing these days.
And if you're another strategy game, if you're into like real-time strategy, would be... Red Alert 3, and that's on consoles as well.
Yeah.
Dude, Halo is a strategy game.
It was at one point.
Halo Wars.
Yeah. Halo Wars. That's actually Halo. That is a strategy.
Yeah, you guys thought I was crazy.
No, I knew exactly what you were talking about the whole time.
Yo-Yo Joe asks, do you prefer open world or linear games?
Open world.
Game.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, assuming it's done well, open world.
Yes, for example, I think I have the same complaint as everybody with Final Fantasy XIII, that it's too linear, because it just doesn't, it feels like you should be able to break out of it. But at the same time, I like games like Skyrim, and I also like games like, what's it called? Dead Space.
Pong.
And I like Pong. Pong is about as open world as it gets.
Okay.
I mean, if it's something like, Grand Theft Auto 3, that game changed my life as a gamer, because it was this entire city that I could just run around and fuck around with anything I wanted to. And it was just, there was this sense of freedom with it that I really hadn't had that often or at all in a game. And yes, I know what you're giggling about, and it's probably something to do with the hookers in the game, isn't it?
I can just imagine Blue running around in the city, like, he's got this starstruck moment, he's looking around, he's, I can fuck everything.
That sounds a lot
don't
like
mean
Bone
me,
Town.
Don't hump the laser.
Is it better than Bone Town? Sean?
Grand Theft Auto 3? No, Grand Theft Auto 3 changed gaming for me in a different way, that I was the only one in my circle of friends that didn't like it, and they like got super obsessed with it. So whenever we would get together and hang out, that's what they'd want to do, and eventually I just stopped hanging out with that group of friends, because could not think of something I'd want to do less than play Grand Theft Auto 3.
I totally hear where you're coming from. I had something similar happen.
Yeah,
it happens.
So, there you go. Lewis, if you're out there, I miss you. I'm glad that game is not around anymore.
Because I missed you so.
All right, someone who isn't Blue Swim, I can't believe you're asking questions on our own show, asks, what are the odds that OnLive's arrival on Google TV will be one of the biggest industry developments of 2012? How long do you think it will be before Google buys OnLive? I think they're going to have to get on more than just Google TV for it to be a huge thing. Apple's got their HDTV coming out. I think there's Sony. You can already play OnLive on the Vio HDTVs, which are basically just computers. I think that's a really cool idea. I think if OnLive keeps moving with it, as far as Google buying OnLive, I don't know that would happen. Google likes to buy companies for specific employees. I don't know that OnLive particularly has any. I think they'd be more likely to buy Gaikai because they haven't developed as much.
And get David Perry in, though.
Yeah, and they get David Perry out of that, yeah. But no, Google does do that. If you have some sort of neat little thing that hasn't quite developed very far yet, Google will scoop you up just for your programmers.
But do you think maybe that being on Google TV is what's going to maybe jumpstart OnLive's success? I mean, I know it's been quasi-successful, but, I mean, do you think this is the thing that's really going to get out there in the market?
I had zero interest in OnLive, but when I heard about that, I thought it was a cool idea. You know, I'm not going to go out of my way to play something on OnLive, but if I buy a TV and it's already on there, you bet your ass I'll play it all the time.
Yeah. I think it was one of the more exciting announcements out of CES. I mean, I watched the whole Microsoft keynote, and
didn't Nintendo build up that they were going to have some big announcement this year at CES?
Wii U.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
they showed it.
Wii U.
But they said it was going to be like a completely different thing, and that we were going to change our minds.
Didn't happen.
Oh, wow.
but I couldn't believe how bad Microsoft's presentation was. I watched a lady play Cut the Rope for 10 minutes.
I don't know. I think OnLive suffers the same problem that a lot of those my dad has this problem all the time with iTunes, where he's got all this stuff that he's purchased, but because he doesn't have the actual discs, if the internet is ever being finicky or whatever, he gets pissed because he's like, I want to watch my show, and he can't watch anything because all of his stuff is on iTunes.
He sounds like that bastard from the series.
No, just in my head. He probably doesn't know.
Let's show. What's the show?
All kinds of stuff. He
downloads
a bunch of different things. But because all of it's on there, and that was like when OnLive was like, you know, talking to us and they were telling us all this stuff, I was like, yeah, but what about the fact that, you know, then if there's no internet, you can't do shit.
Yeah, but you can't really, if that's their business plan, they can't plan on the internet continuing to suck. It's going to get better.
Maybe.
I mean,
if SOPA passes, then it might not, because a lot of people are going to lose interest in a lot of the stuff that they do online. People might start going outside again. God forbid.
Gasp.
The sun, it burns.
The sun can kill you.
Can.
Don't say that. I own it.
Speaking of killing, it's time to kill this show.
Oh.
But
damn, Sean.
But if you would,
that was sad.
If you'd like
like
to bring
a monster.
Us, if you'd like to bring us back to life. Come read our articles. They're at www.tech-gaming.com. They're, you can go there and read the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases. Shout out to Erica from Studio City Best Buy, who's a fan of our show. Hey, Erica.
Yay! I like her name.
Fan of the NOLA.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
Wait, there's a girl hanging out at Best Buy who's a fan of ours?
She works there. I
guess she works there, yeah. Otherwise, that's... Shout out to some person who was hanging out at Best Buy.
Always, yeah, all the time.
She can't wait for BioShock Infinite, so she's cool.
Yeah, you're right. She is cool.
If you'd like to... I lost my place. If you like our opinions on gaming and pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. Robert Allen is at @tech_gaming. I am at Sean Nola. Sage is at Samurage, and Eric Blue, you've changed it from Arink, is at Blue Swim. If you like to subscribe to us on iTunes, keep in mind there are two links, one to the old feed and one to the new feed. Make sure you're listening to the new feed, otherwise you're not going to get new episodes.
And don't forget to check us out on Facebook and, you know, like us and junk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robert, thank you.
Stage. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Sean, thank you.
Arctic Blue. Thank you.
Anytime.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
Did you say hammer time?